Chapter 19, Equus. March 28th, Mirth. Elisa pulled Stavius and Janice aside as they were preparing to leave. She explained, "Raquel is timid and suffers from a form of ASD, which is why her parents chose to homeschool her. She is brilliant, though, and she really likes you, Mark." Stavius suddenly felt uncomfortable. Neither Staven nor Mark was accustomed to being liked by girls, and he was unsure what to say. Thanks, I guess, but why can she speak so clearly one minute and barely be able to construct a sentence the next? Elisa shrugged her shoulders and guessed, "Nobody knows. She has all the language ability. Raquel is eloquent when speaking or writing about genetics, which is her passion, but can barely communicate otherwise. You'll notice that she closes her eyes when she's talking about genetics. It helps her block out the rest of the world. Her condition makes much of her life terribly constrained and complicated. It is also what gives her a unique ability to comprehend genetics. Raquel can simultaneously visualize the tens of thousands of letters in a nucleic acid sequence and comprehend what the combination means. That's how she was able to create a dinosaur from a chicken." Janice sighed. "I guess we each have our issues on both worlds." Then he laughed and added, "And Mark's is that he finally has a girl who likes him. However, he can't understand either her broken casual conversation or her complex professional speech." Stavius groaned, "Thanks for pointing that out, Janice. Do you guys feel weird talking about ourselves as third parties?" Elisa answered, "Somewhat, but it is amazing. I can say and do things that Raquel would never be able to do on Earth. You cannot imagine the never-ending frustration she has inside her. She is so smart and passionate, but finds it difficult to communicate or be with people. You have no idea how terrified she was that you wouldn't like her." Janice concurred, "Yeah, Sean struggles with her identity on Earth, and I have to admit that we're happier here on Mirth. At the same time, Sean has a close and loving family back on Earth, which is something Janice never had here. He never realized what he was missing, and I wouldn't trade either world." Stavius agreed, "Me either, buddy. Be safe on your trip and take care of Juice. We'll meet you back here in the cave before heading into battle. I can't believe we're splitting up after all this time." The three friends hugged, and Elisa and Stavius rejoined the rest of the group, who were now ready to depart. Janice wiped a tear off his face and muttered about how pathetic he was for crying before trotting off to find Juice. Everyone except Janice and Saturn headed out into the bleak, early spring morning. Their first stop was to visit the unicorns in Equus. Stavius wanted to return Queen Esthara's horn and to ask for her assistance in the upcoming battle. The girls were not about to let Stavius visit the unicorns without them again. The trip was much warmer than the flight to Uriel's cave, but no more pleasant. The sky was overcast and a steady drizzle was falling the entire day. Most of the time the rain was little more than a heavy mist, but it didn't matter. Anyone who has ridden a dragon in a downpour knows that waterproof shields are useless. Riders become as wet as humanly possible within the first 5 minutes of the flight. Safe, her three daughters and their riders landed outside the north gate of Equus. They were met by a confused centaur who wondered why an invading flock of dragons would bother knocking at the gate. His confusion further increased when he noticed the riders on their backs. Stavius hopped off Safe's back, looking more like a drowned cat than a human. He strode up to the centaur and said, "Please notify Queen Esthara that Stavius has returned and that he and his friends request an audience." The centaur's eyebrows rose as he replied, "If you know our queen's name, then you must surely know that humans and dragons are not permitted in Equus." Stavius sighed and answered, "In that case, please inform Bernice that her friend Stavius has returned, and be quick about it. We are cold, wet, tired, and require a warm, dry place to recover from our journey." The poor centaur was unsure of what should be done. He dared not desert his post with four dragons and five humans at the gate, despite this fellow's assurance that they would politely wait for his return. He also had a duty to inform his captain of the visitors. His problem was quickly solved with the sound of thundering hooves. Ajdal, king of the unicorns, had arrived. Ajdal stopped before the group and considered them before speaking. "Welcome, Stavius. I had heard of your exploits, but the news was clearly inaccurate since you are standing here. Is this really you? Where is your friend Janice?" "Thank you for greeting us, Your Majesty," Stavius answered with a bow. The others followed his example. "Yes, I am Stavius, and Janus is safely on another journey. I do not, however, know the news of which you speak, for Janus and I were successful in our mission." Rosera giggled. "Listen to him. He sounds so formal." Stavius glared at her before continuing. "These are my fellow prophecy heroes, our guide, Ops, and our friends Safe and her three daughters. I attest to their friendship and loyalty." Ajdal stared at each of them before responding. "I am pleased to learn that you and Janus are both well. I am curious to hear your story." Then he turned to and instructed the kneeling and trembling guard beside him. "These are friends of Equus, but they must remain here until I inform the queen and your captain. I will return shortly. Do not abandon your post." Then Ajdal galloped off without another word. Narayana muttered, "Well, he's not very pleasant." Elisa added, "I thought unicorns were supposed to have, horns." The guard answered, "Only the mares. Wait, you can speak with us?" Versera laughed and replied, "Sure, and so can the dragons, whom Stavius so rudely neglected to introduce. I'm Versera, this is Narayana and Elisa, and the dragons are named Safe, Nari, Sarah, and Mintaka." Safe said, "We are very pleased to meet you," and the centaur nearly fainted. A moment later he said, "I apologize, I have never met a human or a dragon before, and I have never witnessed our king behaving that way before either." Narayana said, "Well, it is kind of a dreary day. Perhaps he's just in a grumpy mood." The rain had stopped and the sky brightened, but the ground was nothing but mud. The guard's eyes widened as he corrected her. "Oh, no! His Majesty is rarely so verbose and accommodating. I have never heard him speak so kindly, nor offer to do something as menial as fetching the captain, and I am certain he has never willingly offered to go to the palace to speak with the queen." Elisa chuckled and said, "But if he's your king, isn't the queen his wife?" The guard answered, "Precisely. He would never willingly meet with her unless it was a crisis. Who are you guys?" Stavius heard hooves pounding before he could answer. It was a booming sound, not as light and rapid as when Ajdal arrived. Bernice was trotting toward them as fast as her bovine legs could carry her. Bernice swept Stavius up into her arms, lifting him high off the ground and pressing him into her hairy chest. He thought she was going to break his spine, but she finally set him down and turned toward the others. "It is so wonderful to see all of you again. I thought you were all lost and was astounded when King Ajdal told me you were here. I am certain that Queen Astharil will invite you in, although probably not your dragons." "Ah," said Mintaka, "I want to see unicorns."
Nari angrily added, "And we are not their dragons. We are people too, you know."
Bernice was taken aback and apologized. "I am so sorry to offend you and did not realize we could communicate. My interaction with dragons is limited, and I have never met a mighty Egan before. Perhaps the queen will permit you to enter Equus, but I doubt it. You are friends of Stavius, and I am certain that you are honorable and trustworthy, but our rules were laid down hundreds of years ago, and it is unlikely she will waive them." The three dragon girls immediately began complaining about the unfairness of the rules. They were making such a ruckus that no one heard Ajdal's return.
"Enough!" he shouted. "Our laws are quite clear on the matter. No dragons may ever enter Equus." He softened his voice and added, "However, there is a powerful magic spring a few miles to the east where you should be able to nest and rest. I am sure that it is not as refreshing as your cave, but it should be sufficient to restore your energy. Also, there is plenty of game in the area, so you should not be hungry. Again, I apologize for the inconvenience. Please understand that this has nothing to do with our impression or our respect for you personally. This is simply the enforcement of an ancient law that has helped protect our region for centuries." Safe bowed her head to him and said, "We understand and will abide by your law. Thank you for directing us toward a place where we can rest. Will you please notify us when our friend's visit is concluded?"
Ajdal replied, "I will personally ensure that Bernice delivers the message to you.
Our queen has commanded that the humans shall stay with the satyrs. She will have an audience with the five of you tomorrow morning. Bernice will guide the four females to the satyr village, while I escort Stavius. He and I have much to discuss.
Frisera groaned. Satyrs? I wanted to meet some unicorns. Bernice chuckled. Don't worry, child. You'll like the satyrs. I'll introduce you to some unicorn mares along the way, and we should pass a flock of pegasi as well, which I think you'll enjoy. The dragons flew off to find the spring and build a nest while Bernice led the women toward the satyr village. Ashdal snorted at the guard who was frozen in terrified attention and motioned to Stavius to climb on his back. Stavius chuckled at the stream of pee flowing from the nervous centaur guard as they rode off. Seeing a human riding a unicorn stallion bareback was something he had never seen before, nor was he likely to ever see it again. Ops and the girls were amazed by Equus thus far and had met several unicorn mares along their short journey. They could barely describe the joy, gentleness, and love they felt with the experience. They startled a flock of pegasi who cantered and then took flight when they approached, and now they were entering the satyr village accompanied by an enthusiastic greeting. They were being swept toward a vast, ornate pavilion by the prancing herd of satyrs when Narayana stopped and screamed, "What the heck is that?" The others turned in the direction she was pointing and gasped. There, in front of the ornate pavilion, was a massive statue of a man lifting a beer stein. A monument to a man in a satyr village was strange in and of itself. However, the subject was entirely unexpected. They were staring at a 30-foot-tall carving of Janus. Chief Elder Sarvis strode up to the statue and placed his hand on its base. He announced, "This glorious statue of great hero, you like?" The girls were too busy trying to stifle their laughter to speak, so Ops replied, "The likeness is uncanny. I only wish he were here to see it." "Me too. It no good that he not live to see," Sarvis sadly answered. "Oh, Janus is fine. He's just on a different journey, but don't worry. We will be sure to inform him of the honor," Versera said with the sincerest face she could muster. "Janus lives!" shouted Sarvis. "Today is glorious day! We must have party!" The crowd approved of Chief Elder Sarvis's proclamation to throw a party, as they always did. They immediately began chanting, "Janus! Janus!" as they scurried to the bar. Ops asked the Chief Elder what Janus had done to warrant such a great honor. Sarvis suspiciously studied the group. He could not believe that Janus's friends did not know of his powers, but Elisa explained how Janus was very modest. Both Versera and Narayana began coughing and sputtering when she said this. The Chief Elder beamed as he told his well-rehearsed story of how Janus had created a magical box that brought beer to the perfect temperature. Narayana was not as impressed with this as Sarvis and questioned why a single invention justified such a magnificent statue. Sarvis laughed and agreed that they also felt that way at first. He pointed to their original memorial to Janus. It was a nondescript plaque above the bar. He explained, "We love cold beer, but not realize Janus's true genius until winter. We forget about Janus's beer chiller when weather get cold and just keep beer outside. Then get big storm and all beer freeze. It terrible thing, but happens sometimes. Beer is ruined and makes for long winter. One day, Starion reach in chiller and pull out beer. We shocked. It's still perfect temperature. Janus beer chiller keep beer at ideal temperature when hot or cold outside. You're right. Janus modest. He never tell us this miracle. This when unanimous vote to make statue." Tears were flowing down Sarvis's face by the time he finished and found a beer stein in his hand. He raised a toast, and another mighty cheer to Janus arose from the crowd. "They certainly love their beer," observed Stavius. Ashdal had deposited him at the edge of town. The Unicorn King had listened to Stavius's story and reason for visiting, but doubted Queen Esthara would agree to assist them. There was intense hatred between the two races, but he admitted that if anyone could make it happen, it would be Stavius, as he galloped off to the north. Morning came early for the five travelers, even though none of them had partaken in the satyr's famous beer.
They were exhausted from yesterday's long journey and exciting new sights. Now they were unrested after the satyr's late-night party. Viserra was sniveling with the beginnings of a cold and grumbling about having to sleep on the ground. Narayana was still asleep, snoring like a drunken sailor, and Ops was trying to stretch the kinks out of her back as she joined Viserra in complaining about their sleeping arrangements.
Stavius chuckled as he watched the morning circus comprised of his friends. He was resting against the same tree he had been leaning on all night. His mind had been racing after his long conversation with Ajdal, and he had barely slept. Stavius had shared the stories of his exploits and plans, and Ajdal had explained how the unicorns might be able to assist them. Neither could envision a way to convince Esthara or Bernice to allow the mares to form an army and leave Equus to fight in a human conflict, though. They agreed that he had to use the right approach, but Stavius still had no idea how to do that after contemplating it for the entire night. The young man casually suggested, "Feel free to sleep in this morning. There's a basket of fruit here to eat when you're ready. However, I'm leaving in 5 minutes for our audience with the Queen. She's even less tolerant of tardiness than Saturn." The girls jumped as though Stavius had blasted one of his thunderbolts. "Miss meeting the Unicorn Queen? Never!" yelled Narayana as she threw off her covers and jumped up. 5 minutes!" screamed Viserra. "I will never be able to be ready to meet royalty in 5 minutes!" Ops laughed at the children before asking, "Wait, where is Elisa?" They had been sleeping under a large canopy strung between trees. Lightweight sheets draped from the edges to create a sort of pavilion, and glowing stones provided warmth beside their beds of grass. Elisa was not inside. Stavius began to explain that Elisa had arisen at first light, but was interrupted by her return. "Hurry up, guys! You have to see this!" she exclaimed as she swept aside one of the sheets and burst into the pavilion. The four weary travelers followed her as she raced up the hill out of the shallow depression surrounding their abode. They were greeted with the most beautiful landscape any of them had ever seen. The heroes stood on a small rise, gazing across a broad pasture of blue-green grass under a sapphire-blue sky. The sun had just cleared the treetops and was causing the moisture from yesterday's rains to glisten like diamonds on the grass. But the sights which caught their breaths were the flowers. Thousands of blue, pink, yellow, and white hyacinths and winter aconite flowers were scattered in clusters throughout the rolling hills.
It was as though spring had arrived this morning and magically unrolled a colorful carpet over the long winter's mud.
Viserra gazed at the small groups of unicorns prancing among the flowers as a flock of pegasi flew overhead and sighed. "I now know why they never want to leave this place," Narayana added. "And I understand why they keep people out. Imagine how the seven families would exploit this place." Stavius agreed, "Which is why we should not be late in meeting the Queen. We are going to need her help to get the remaining talismans." Ops and the girls ceased their sightseeing and magically cleaned themselves. They transformed their clothes into flowing gowns. Then they walked toward the palace, munching fruit from the basket Stavius had brought. "But how are you going to get Queen Esthara to help us?" asked Ops. "Did Ajdal have any suggestions?"
Stavius grunted. "Ajdal has no idea of how to convince his wife, but he did provide some insights. He doubts the Queen has any interest in a human prophecy, but she does have concerns about Septumculus. He said that a war was fought long ago between unicorns and humans to end slavery. Afterward, Equus was founded with its impenetrable walls and centaur guards. The two races have lived in peaceful separation for centuries. Esthara is concerned that the seven families have become too powerful and power-hungry. The centaurs deliver daily reports of Septumculan soldiers roving around the area, and she suspects they are planning an invasion. Ajdal thinks there is a chance the Queen will agree to help after she learns of the slave camp. However, her objective would be to destroy the seven families, not to fulfill the prophecy."
"I have no issue with that goal," grumbled Narayana. "It's high on my list, too." "So Ajdal now thinks that you'll help us?" Elisa asked. "That's fantastic." Hearing this news while walking through a colorful meadow on this warm, sunny morning was making anything seem possible. Stavius dampened her enthusiasm as he disagreed. "No, Ajdal still doubts she will help us. She is the latest in a long line of rulers obsessed with defensive isolation. We would have to overcome centuries of belief to change her thinking, and no, He says the queen would not comprehend the concept that a best defense might be a good offense. Narayana bit hard into the apple she was carrying. That was what she had been about to suggest. So, what is your plan, Stavius? Asked her Sarah. I have no idea, and we've run out of time, he admitted, as they arrived at the palace gate.